Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, you delectable divils for the pints. Welcome to this week's Snowcast here in the absolute idyllic setting of J&K Walsh's pub on George Street in Waterford. My Waterford geography is improving week by week, pub by pub. This is a pub that featured in the 12 Snokes back in December, and we did some rambling, some very drunk and incoherent rambling. I think we mostly slagged Simon off because instead of having a nice pint, he was having a glass of water in here, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And it is just the most beautiful, beautiful relic of a pub. A throwback to old pubs.
The yonder year.
The year when the pub was the social hub of Irish society. And basically, it's beautiful on the outside. I put a Twitter up there, a picture on Twitter there just before we came online, in a reply to a tweet from Peter from the Portage Pub Club. Just a picture of the outside, and it's so scenic. And we're sitting just inside the front window in the snug here on, and it's like
we're actually in the snug
for once. We have a little window here where the barman is putting the pints down when we order them. A little door in. It's all wooden. Old wooden chairs with brilliant little designs. Each one is individual. And the bar is just a long bar. High stools up against the bar. And a high stool and a counter opposite the bar. And
no, that's tables it. And chair. We're at a table and chair here, all right. It's the only one in the actual main section of the bar. There's a room at the back as well, all right, that has tables and chairs. But the whole of the bar is just high stool, the length of the bar, and the length of the opposite wall as well.
Now, you all know we're absolute punch-ons for the... That's 2 weeks in a row I've gone risque with a pronunciation of a word I'm not too au fait with. What was it last week? Shalom. Shalom. You all know we're absolute punch-ons for the craft beer divils. But J&K Welch's is the kind of bar that is a throwback to when the Guinness and Smithwick's had an absolute monopoly on the market. So it's the kind of bar that you come in and it's very traditional. Now, you all know we're very, like, we're proponents on of...
Proponents? Where it's coming from?
I have no idea.
No, you're right, like, but like...
Is it the right word?
Yeah. I think so. I don't know. But
I actually, there was a load of chat about the Irish language that we get onto later on Twitter yesterday, so I basically spent the whole of yesterday evening thinking and talking Oscuelga and tweeting Oscuelga. So, like, I don't know where these words are coming out of. Maybe my Irish vocabulary is better and I'm translating back. What was I saying? Proponents. We're proponents of buying local and buying local drink and stuff like that. But there's a certain lovely character and a certain lovely cultural nostalgia when you come into a pub like this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think as well, last week we were in Downsis, and in fairness to them, they're the old pub that has, you know, embellished, like, the kind of craft beer culture and stuff, and have
bit of craft beer culture, bit of squash for a while.
But, like, you know, you had your KPA there last year as well. But, you know, like, and that was delicious. Boy, I had a pint of Guinness there as well, because, again, that was like the oldest pub in Waterford. It really, like, was just like such an old atmosphere, and I just wanted to embellish that. And I think it's those kind of classic drinks like Guinness, that, like, those old 1759 established drinks that are, you know, the ones that you kind of go to.
An 18th century drink for an 18th century pub.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And here's the same, right? So we walked in, and we both had a look at the taps. We didn't even need to look at the taps because you're not getting much here, right?
Yeah.
So, point of Guinness. A fella came in there about 20 minutes ago, and he asked for a pint of Heineken. And the barman said, all we do in here is Guinness, Smittix, or Harp. On tap. That's it. So, like,
take her pick.
That's it.
Are you a stout, an ale, or a lager, man?
Yeah, exactly.
And it depends on the day of the week for me, to be honest. To be 100% honest with you, it depends on the day of the week for me. But I find, like, when you come into a pub like this where it's a real good pint of Guinness, is creamy, has that full body, but also that, like, that little burnt oat kind of coffee-esque kind of flavour, you just can't beat it, like. And like I said, you know, craft beers were all for them, but sometimes when you come to an establishment like this, and part of the charm and part of the lore of somewhere like this is the pint of stout, is the old school pint of Guinness in an old school glass as well. Like, you can't beat it.
No,
just can't beat it. Like,
and even is there something that has literally just happened there where someone has come along and said, it's getting a bit kind of chilly, there's a bit of a draft in the door.
Yeah.
The barman goes, yeah, no hassle, comes out, closes the front door, and, like, it's a glass front door, so you know the place is still open, but closes it. You know, it's that like, you enjoy your experience here. It doesn't matter about getting feet in the door now. This is about your enjoyment. Like, I fucking love that.
That's, but even as well, like, the moment we walked in the door tonight, like, greeted by the barman, well, lads, how are you getting on tonight? Mm. And, like, we actually had something on for our day jobs just before this. And so we're actually kind of suited and booted. Like, we both have shorts on and semi-formal pants on. So, like, he obviously... That's... Well, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The listeners know what I mean. And then, you know, straight away, he's like, well, you just in from work. And, like, we put in a long shift today, so, like, yeah, we're rewarding ourselves so with a pint. Semi-formal pants.
Just in my head, I have, like a pair of, like, you know...
Tracksuit pants with a zip in the middle.
No, I was thinking the opposite. I was thinking, like, suit pants with an elasticated band.
Suit pants with buttons to hold it up the side just in case you're DTF.
Yeah.
Oh, will you stop, will you?
Sure.
I love these bars, like the long narrow bar, and, like, to be honest with you, these are the kind of bars, and this is the kind of pint that, like, say, not even the last generation, the generation before us, like our grandparents, our granduncles, grandaunts would have, like, gone socialising, drinking in this kind of pub with these kind of pints.
Mm.
And, like, It's a classic piece of Irish history and culture that is preserved in these kind of bars.
Yeah. Oh, no, definitely.
I fucking love it.
I love it as well. There's something not patriotic isn't the word, but, like, there's something
it's
culturally embedded in you that, like, you know, just that makes you feel...
I feel like I'm on the set of the field.
Yeah. But even, like, say... Like, over, like, Christmas pints are a magical thing in Ireland, whereby you meet friends that you haven't seen in year, like, since last Christmas or whatever. But, like, it's pubs like this that, like, explode the like the conversation and things like that. Like you're all perched up on a high stool. Like you're not like there's no big long table or like there's not like you know you're not sitting beside anyone.
You're
like,
huddled together.
You're huddled together, like you know, and even like the lads in here who've come in tonight, like guys are just kind of wandering in the street and they're chatting away to the other people who are just sat at the bar because you've no option. Like you're just sitting beside them, like you know.
It's what a country pub is.
Yeah.
In the city, and it's wonderful. The other thing I was thinking of there, like, is we during the live podcast with Finn, actually, we chatted a little bit about Diageo and Heineken and Coors, Malton Coors, but they tend to go hard at the nostalgia marketing, and it works quite well. And I think it's that kind of nostalgia factor, like when you're a kid and you're around your grandparents for Sunday dinner or whatever it is, and they're chatting about the few pints they had on the Saturday night. Like this setting that we're in right now is what you picture them, is the picture you paint in your head as a 7-8-year-old eating the old Sunday roast.
Oh no, it is, yeah. And, even since we've been in here, right, they've dimmed the lights. It's like even more majestic, like,
yeah.
And it wasn't the dimming of like last call dimming. It was no. We just want to set the mood a bit nicer in here, like. And it's just like literally, I don't know. I feel like in a lot of other pubs, you have like, you know, it's the right formula. This is, you know, this is the playlist that, you know, makes people in a good mood. You know, this is the Spotify playlist we have that like makes people want to drink.
Yeah.
Makes people want to have this atmosphere. This is the layout of chairs, you know, that make people comfortable, but not too comfortable that they won't go up to the bar. And all this, you know, it's a bit like formulaic or something like that, right? Whereas like here, like it's so ad hoc, and it's like it's actually reactionary to the patrons of the pub who come in, where like, you know, it's just like, you know what, like no one's in here reading or no one here is in here on their phone. So we'll dim the lights here now, and you know, we'll also, you know, put up a few stools here by the bar, a few extra stools, you know, we'll pull stools from one side of the bar to the other side of the bar because these people need those chairs, or like we'll close the front door because there's a draft coming in. Like, it's just great. Like, the barman went out for a cigarette there a while ago just because, you know,
he could,
like, you know. And it's just like, you know, there's no like guff of like someone coming behind the bar pulling a pint or magic. It's fucking look at this as well, behind the bar there's like all these like random drawers. It's like something you'd see in like an old pharmacy or an old post office or something like that. Like,
but you see, I think
there for no purpose whatsoever. But
this used to be a pub and a grocery shop all in one, wasn't it?
The blind man's, blind man's pub, like fellow behind the bar. I think, have I told this before?
I think
we had the story, but like,
we actually have a lot of new listeners. Tell them again.
So anyway,
tell me, I listen.
The reason why, so this place was closed for years and years and years, and it's only been open maybe, this is probably the second year of it being open now.
Yeah, it wasn't open when I moved to Waterford.
Yeah,
two and a half years, I'd say.
But the reason I know is from my childhood and my dad coming in here. And I think my dad used to get, he used to buy, I think, cigars in here, like on occasion. But your man behind the counter, and he'd obviously get a pint at the same time, like, you know. But your man behind the counter here was blind, fully blind. So he used to work on an honor system whereby, like, you would come in and would hand over the cash to him and go, like, that's fucking £20. And he'd go, yeah, no hassle. And, like, he knew the till, so he knew exactly what he was giving back to you. Like, and you'd get the exact change off him, like, no, and, you know. He'd pour the pint magically and stuff as well, like obviously timing and stuff, like he had it all down to a T. So like, amazing history. Like, as we were talking in the podcast last week, we were in Tom Mars after the podcast last week, and we spoke a little bit about it on the podcast. But like, these gems of pub with like
nuggets
of history. And like, I don't know, what do you think? Do you think, is there pubs nowadays that are going to replicate that? Or are they going to replicate it in a different way? Are they going to have their own history, like, in a different way?
It's very hard to tell. Like, say for example, take Grady's Yard for example, as like a bar that's open less than a year, that we have like championed it several times on this podcast, rightly so. And it is very, it has great character for a newly opened bar. But an awful lot of the character of the pub is like the almost like that if the walls could speak feature.
Yeah.
I that you can't buy, you can't create.
Well, look, you don't create character over a year or two.
No.
You've been over 20 years.
Like it's, well, it's, what is it here? 70 years, I'd say.
Yeah.
The little notches the little kinks in the shelves, the little, like, you know, tears in the stools and stuff like that, where you're like, these are well worn. The amount of people who've passed through here, for like the whole point of this podcast is pub chat, like that essence of this is somewhere where the crack was routinely had year in, year out for decades.
Yeah, it's just in Bicey Chat, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think like anyone listening to this podcast more than likely has been to a pub. Do you know what I mean? They know what we're on about.
If you haven't, we do recommend it.
Well, I mean, like look, there's a reason why we keep going to the pubs we keep going to. And I mean, like, Phil Grimes, again, like, has that character, has that just feel of, you know, crack was had here throughout the ages. It's just,
I think
it's a non-descriptive essence.
There's a difference, though, between
je ne sais quoi.
There's a difference between Phil Grimes and this pub, though.
Oh,
right?
Big difference, yeah.
Right? So I think that in Phil Grimes, the patrons and the proprietor barman, right, add, like, to, like, Phil,
yeah.
Phil Grimes does have a bit of an essence of the pub itself, of like its character and how beautiful it looks and stuff. But I think it's mainly built up of like the people in there, right?
Tom is 50% of it, if not more.
Whereas in here, we could have walked in here and sat in a corner on our own without having to chat to anyone, and the chat would have come because of the surrounding.
It's like, it's almost like the ghost of pints past are talking through us.
Right, come on.
Anyways, listen, that was actually quite, I really enjoyed that intro.
I know.
I want to enjoy listening back to this and editing it. Actually, we're recording a day early as well, so we have an extra day to edit it.
Yeah.
Bazinga. We're going to the music festival the weekend. You won't be doing any editing.
No, they're not. No, I
could do it tomorrow. One crop.
You never know.
Yeah. The world is my toaster.
Anyway, I was there, like, if any of you follow me or even follow the Snowcast, because I tweeted on the Snowcast about it as well. Follow either me or the Snowcast on Twitter. You would have seen me last night conversing in a bit of Irish and also tweeting about the Irish language, because the Irish Independent, a newspaper in Ireland here, tweeted about the Irish language yesterday, talking about should the Irish language be compulsory in schools, and it was suggesting that senior cycle students now feel it shouldn't be compulsory in schools. And I just wanted to get a feel of how you felt about it, Owen, because I have very, very polarised opinions on this, for obvious reasons that I spoke the language growing up. But I wanted to get your feel of it as someone who I know that does speak the language and does hold it in high regard. But you went through a different, you went through the opposite education I went through. You went to an all-Irish speaking primary school and then an all-English speaking secondary school. I went through an all-English speaking primary school and an all-Irish speaking secondary school.
Yeah.
So I'd love to know your take on it.
So I feel for myself, so I think, like, yeah, for an all-English speaking secondary school, right, I went through primary school, and, like, I don't know, you can never say you're fluent or whatever, but I was definitely able to hold a conversation, and, like, at lunchtime, we were always, like, discipline sounds like like it was like Christian Brother fucking slapping you over the head kind of thing, but it was encouraged, it was against the rules, I suppose, to speak in English during lunch hour. Now obviously we did, because it was our first language that we were speaking, but like there was that kind of, like, you know, if the teacher was coming around, you could switch to Irish like that, yeah. and you could like converse like quite
easily, which is
like,
a skill in itself.
Which is a skill in itself, like, you know. And but you like you'd be able to, and even still, like if I'm speaking Irish, like I don't have to translate English that much. Like
yeah.
when I'm thinking, I think yeah, I can think in Irish. Do you yeah. know what I mean? Like, you know, so like it's only when I'm stuck on a word that I go, oh, you know, like, and you know, yeah. and I get, you know, you get stuck on that word, and then you have to kind of think of the English and go back. Like, but the kind of flow of the language goes on. But anyway, so had that whole and was, you know, quite able to hold a conversation in Irish. Coming out of primary school, and I can 100% say that the Irish that I wrote for my Leaving Cert Irish in secondary school was of a substandard level than me leaving my primary school.
So you regressed going from a 12-year-old to an 18-year-old.
Yeah, I did.
Despite doing classes
yeah.
three times a week or
yeah,
whatever, however frequently you did it.
But that's because, and everyone who has gone through the Irish course will agree with me here, is that it is too focused on comprehensions and novels and books and poems and, like, you know, comprehending the themes and stuff of that. Whereas you should be, like, you know, just conversing, yes. and you should be like, you know, you should just be having conversations the whole time and
yeah.
enjoying the language. Now, there is obviously an important point of, you know, remembering the history and remembering those poets and stuff like that, but that should be very, very, very secondary to actually being able to communicate in Irish.
Yeah. Can I make a point on that? That I think we as a society have looked at it through the wrong prism. I think it's very easy to blame the syllabus and the way it's taught and stuff like that, and I would have been critical of it an awful lot. But as someone who, my first exposure to Irish was through my grandparents and my father as a young child before I started school, where they would have spoken Irish to me, so I would have picked up a good bit. Then I went to primary school where no Irish was spoken. Or no, Irish was taught, but it wasn't the language used in the school. But I was naturally very good at Irish because I had heard it at home and I was able to pick it up and stuff like that. So I was exposed to Irish through the home. So my initial view of Irish was, this is something that is spoken in my grandparents' house. So this is something that I've been exposed to in a loving setting, as opposed to, you know, you go to school and you learn Irish there.
Yeah.
So the language was actually a method of communication, like a man comer saide, which the Irish for communication is like comer saide, which is basically like a conversation. It was how my grandfather could speak fluent Irish. He was from Kerry, he was a guard. I'd come down, I'd see him in the morning and he'd say, "When to Tanavos the breakfast," which means, "Did you enjoy your breakfast?" You know, "Refshe das, refshe blasta," and then I'd pick up, "Was it nice? Was it tasty?"
Yeah.
And I'd answer him, and you'd use descriptive words. English is taught in schools the exact same way that Irish is taught, through learning about the comprehensions, through learning about poetry and stuff like that. Irish people don't have this aversion to English because it's the spoken language in the house. So it all comes from the home. So I think it should be compulsory in schools because it is the official first language as per the constitution. So people should have to be educated through Irish at least to some degree.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is a responsibility of... I mean, how can you be a nationalist? How can you want a united Ireland but have a derogatory opinion on the Irish language?
Yeah,
those two things conflict.
But but a derogatory opinion doesn't necessarily mean like you have to speak. You know that you have to speak the language, or that you have to like you have to promote it. Mm. Simply because if you haven't had the same education or the same ability to speak the language, it's very tough to pick up the language afterwards.
Yeah.
So it's very hard then to pass that on to anyone.
So this is where I was thinking, right? Ultimately, if there are people out there who think that that their sense of Irishness is important to them. I mean, right, I'm not saying it's too late for them to become fluent in Irish, because it's not. It's never too late to learn a language.
Yeah.
When we were in college, I was coming out of a lecture one day and I met my primary school principal, who had been retired about 10 years, doing a course in Spanish. Because he just wanted to learn.
Yeah.
It's never too late to learn. But people don't have time in their day-to-day lives. There are now like Instagram accounts. There's Moon Tor Meg. There's Lower Lum. These Instagram accounts that I follow. And it just helps keep you tipping along every day. And I can speak Irish, so it's I can jump in and jump out. But they're really, really informative. So like that Moon Tor Meg, she literally puts up her outfit of the day and describes it in Irish and puts a glossary at the end. She does little stories where she writes the Irish word and the English word underneath. And so, you know, you can pick up bits. And if you have a sense of Irishness about you and your Irishness is important to you, as a parent or as a prospective parent, if you introduce the next generation to the Irish language through these media, it doesn't have to be speaking Irish all day every day to them, but it can be a loving, positive influence on a child before they go to school of the Irish language. Then the prejudice that most students get, that Irish is just fucking thing that's bet into in school or is a burden because it's homework, isn't there by the time they're adults and they come to realise, shit, actually this is something I should have cherished in my childhood. That's where I think we're going wrong. Irish comes first in school as opposed to being introduced in the home, and that's genuinely where I think we're going wrong. And I think now most people have Instagram. Most people who are going to be parents in the next 10 years have Instagram, Twitter, whatever. There are accounts to follow that, yeah, they won't make you fluent in Irish. It's not Duolingo. It's not spending 5 years in the Gaeltacht immersing yourself in it. But it's enough. It mightn't even be enough to converse, but it's enough to turn around to your child and say, that's a lovely goona, that's a lovely dress, do you know, and introducing it to a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, they're sponges at that age. And I think the Department of Education are failing, but at the same time too, it's an easy excuse for people to say, oh, it's all on the Department of Education, teachers teach it wrong, the syllabus is wrong. All you need to do is throw a couple of fuckle in at home and it'll make the world, trust me, as someone who's gone through it that way, it'll make the world a difference.
Oh, it will. But I'm also going to say the Department of Education is wrong.
I agree, yeah. I 100% agree with that as well.
I just think that, like, say, like, conversationally, like, or just even trying to speak, like, Irish in general, right? That, like, it should be brought down to the basics. And then, like, say then in the senior cycle of education, right? When you're going through and you're preparing for your leaving cert, right? The conversational stuff is left behind. Okay, you have your oral or writer, right?
But like, well, that's scripted.
But that's scripted. Yeah. And again, you can read a piece of paper, right? But like for those, say, like the comprehension things, you end up now you're talking about teams and you're talking about like you know, descriptive terms and stuff like that. And like, that's way too advanced. Like, that's not a conversation. Like, like if you're going out and you're having a pint in a pub and you're a kind that's great together, right? You're not going into like teams and stuff then, right?
But it's gas, like, I'll put it this picture, right? How many people did Irish for the Leaving Cert? Could be honours, pass, whatever. Did it for the Leaving Cert, scraped through it.
Yeah.
But now could order a bag of ketamine because they listen to NECAP.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I know.
Because it's practical, it's simplified. They even have a song, Incognito, where it's how to speak Irish to get away from the shades and stuff like.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the approach language is wrong. Like, you look at Scandinavia. Why are Scandinavians polyglots? Why can someone in Denmark speak Swedish, Finnish, Norwegian, English, Danish and German?
Yeah.
Because they're all spoken at home. They're all introduced at home. And then it's propped up by the education system. We've come at it the wrong way. And like, we are a young country. And a young country that's trying to regain itself of itself after 800 years of being told you're British.
Yeah.
So it's a lot tougher. But we could make one huge leap through a generation if our generation introduced just a few words at home with our kids. Now, I put up a tweet yesterday, like I'm going to speak Irish to my kids the whole time and have them like converse with me in Irish. I can do that. Niamh doesn't speak fluent Irish. She's not going to be able to do that. But as I said, so long as she chips in and it's a positive thing from that interview, it's a win-win. It's a win-win. And eventually then we could have a significant percentage of the population able to speak Irish. Because the other side of it too is, I can speak French because I can speak Irish.
Yeah.
I pick languages up so quick.
Yeah.
I can go to Spain for a week and have 50 phrases that just come to me out of nowhere because I've got that
ability to you have the initial translation ability in your head, so it translates.
Yeah. And because all my siblings now speak fluent Irish as well, and because we speak you've been around my siblings the odd time, like, we'll jump between Irish and English the whole time, and we could be speaking in Irish and reply in English and then answer half Irish, half English, and it becomes so natural that then all of a sudden, if I wanted to, I could throw a French phrase in there out of nowhere. It just becomes second nature. Yeah. It's just a part of our brain that needs to be worked and worked and worked.
Yeah.
It's like a muscle.
No, good.
But it's also a very simple, people make it out like it's a really difficult language to learn. Actually, structurally, it's a lot easier to learn than English. Way easier than English. And, Spanish, Italian and French are all Latin derivative languages. They're all quite similar in the structure. But if you learn Irish, because the Celtic languages there's a Celtic influence on them.
Yeah.
It's so easy to pick up those languages if you know Irish.
Yeah, no, it is. It all translates upon one.
Yeah. And even if you're not Irish, or you don't live in Ireland, it's never too late. Or it's a great little language to learn. If you're looking for a little small language to learn, you live in Wales or England or America, learn a bit of Gaelic.
I know. But you do feel a little embarrassed when you're out, away traveling or whatever, and you have the Danish or those Scandinavian countries, and they're there and they're conversing amongst everyone around you, and then everything is just translated to English for you because you don't have the ability. As you said, your ability to translate from English to Irish and then Irish to French or English to French or however it's an innate skill. It's something that you're able to do and it's a skill in itself. But it's that ability to translate that allows you to translate whatever, and it makes them so much easier to learn languages.
But even I went to American football in Wembley last year in London. Myself and the brothers go most years, and Aoife, my sister, came with me 2 years ago. And even on the tube, right? Good little segue story before we take a break. Frankie Kokoza of the X Factor a couple of years ago came on the tube with us, and he was under the influence of alcohol, at least, shall we say.
He wasn't called Kokoza for a reason.
No. And I mean, it's well established why he was kicked off the X Factor.
Yeah.
But anyway, we were having a bit of crack anyway with Frankie Kokoza. But what was brilliant was, myself and my siblings were able to converse in Irish and have a private conversation without having to be we were look at the state of this gobshite.
Yeah.
We were able to say it in Irish and he couldn't understand us. But even that sense of privacy in a conversation on public transport, because when you're foreign you use public transport a lot more than you use at home. My pint glass is empty.
Yeah, so is mine.
Let's take a stop and we'll be back with some less heavy shite after this.
Good luck.
After possibly a word from our sponsors. Here's a little song in the Irish language, written by DJ Walsh and Owen Tab in their former guise as the Courgettes.
This was written in Davy Max, isn't it?
Yeah. There was a couple on a Tinder date next to us, and they didn't talk to each other at all. They listened to us composing songs for the night. By the way, singing is bad in Davy Max. It's very hard to write songs in Davy Max if you're not allowed singing there. I don't think you're allowed singing here either, but we'll give it a rendition anyway. It's even long. Ma chapin ali.
Gohi dohi. An fool husk.
An meg me fool. Iri hangiri.
Ta me da riri.
That was for all you Gaelic loving Garys out there. May you be beautiful and bountiful and have a life full of pints. Anyway, moving swiftly along.
And warm in the winter.
Warm in the winter and cold in the summer.
Keep that cap upon your cowl.
May you leap about like a goat in a field.
Right.
Little in joke there. So Owen, obviously, we've once ever, we've been voice checked by someone as the lads from the Snowcast.
Yeah.
Once ever it's happened. So that person picked up on our accents.
Yeah.
Knew us be the voice and said, "Cheers, you're the lads from the Snowcast."
Yeah.
So obviously we must have distinctive accents, or maybe bland accents, and he was like, "Where's that bland common accent from?" And he could have been asking tens of people that night if they were the lads from the Snowcast. If you could choose any accent to have for the rest of your life, which one would it be?
Right, so I was actually having a think about this, right? And you're saying accent, right?
Yeah.
So then initially when you said that, I was assuming like English, not accent, but like speaking English. So I was just like, you know, then you kind of discount a few of the non-English speaking accents.
So you don't want to be like Luigi in The Simpsons, who like doesn't speak Italian but speaks English through broken Italian accents.
Exactly, yeah. Or like French or Spanish or, you know, or German or whatever. Right?
I was thinking you could speak like, how you say, a French person who doesn't understand English properly.
Yeah. So, but then I was thinking, like, you know, Am I a French person? Like, because the French language is beautiful.
I think you have a lovely Serbian head in it.
I do have a lovely Serbian head, but I probably wouldn't fancy the old Serbian language. So, what's the criteria for this now? Are we talking English accent?
No, it's just, that's your accent. I'm not saying which language you're speaking.
Right, okay. So then I am gonna bring it back to the English language then, because I did a good bit of travelling, and like everyone goes, like if it's a big group of like multinationalities, it boils down to English. Everyone speaks English, right? So then
the imperialistic bastards,
right? So you want a good accent in that, in speaking that language then. So I think I'll go Scottish.
Okay.
I think I'll go Scottish, like. Yeah,
You can't go wrong with the Scottish accent.
No, it's like every time I hear or meet like a Scottish person, right? Like literally,
you just want to be them.
You want to be them, but like also like when you hear them speak as well, there's like a little like, oh, you fucking dibble, you're an absolute gem, you know.
The Irish and the Scottish have this lovely telepathy.
Yeah,
like you could look at a Scot and you'd both have a pint and you wouldn't know how it happened.
No, there'd be 2 pints ordered before you knew it, like. You
wouldn't even have to order them, they just appear.
The
Celtic gods of pints would.
So,
yeah, Scottish is a good one.
Yeah, no, I think the people, there's a bit of crack about them, shares a bit of like our like shares a bit
there's
of
a lot of cultural similarity, yeah. There's a lot of shared heritage there.
But then like even like closer to home then as well, like, you know, as in I have like a Waterford accent that would probably quite a neutral Waterford accent.
It's not overly strong.
No, it's not overly strong. But like what other county would I like to have?
Oh, like I adore the Kerry accent. But see, roll around there for 3-4 hours, walk about it. So like walk a bit out of here and then kick off and wouldn't know what come out and try go be talking about Anthony, no one will have a clue what's wrong about.
Yeah. I'd probably like a nice South Dublin accent.
Oh Jesus Christ, that's the worst. That's worse than North Dublin. I have a thing for the Nordy accent. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. Doing an owl like.
I don't know, I'll fucking tell you now. Be alright, eh?
Yeah.
If I was going international, Caribbean has to be like up there. Oh man. After what, like, I love Cool Runnings. So I'd love to be like, as some say, man, you know, you can't believe Jamaica's got the bobsled team.
Do you remember during in college there was that thing? I don't know if this was in my this is in my house in college anyway, but we had the thing where you say, like, if you say beer can.
Beer can.
If you say beer can in.
Beer can.
In English accent, I think, and if you say bacon.
Beer can.
Mm. Yeah. Beer can. Beer can. You say bacon in Jamaican accent.
It's like the same thing, but in a different, slightly different
accent. Yeah,
slightly,
yeah.
I love the Caribbean accent because of Cool Runnings. I also think I have a slight draw for the Canadian accent because when I lived with Sonia, when she'd ring home, she'd spend like an hour being uber Canadian.
Yeah, yeah. And like, she is definitely like neutralized as well.
Oh, like, no, because the best thing about when I moved in with Sonia was she became full on Irish country girl when she was swearing. But every other part of her language was neutral until she spoke to her. And then she'd be on, like, Skype with her parents, like her mother or father. She'd be on Skype with her sister, and she'd be full-on Canadian, and then she'd give an owl, dog shite. Oh, it's brilliant. Even on the podcast, when you listen back, like, sometimes she got a neutral accent, but when she curses, there's a little fucking Irish... There's an Irish enraged leprechaun girl of Indian heritage bursting to get out, like, yeah. In terms of well, obviously, I have to give Scouse a shout as well because, like, I've been to Liverpool so much and I've a good few Scouse friends, and I do love, but man, life's not too bad, you know. You're looking at all around these people, you know, it's away from, and it's all right.
Sometimes, if you surround yourself with Scouse,
yeah,
people.
But sometimes I talk like this all night, and like it fucking drives me mad. She's like, you know, from fucking Liverpool. And I said, well, how the fuck do you know? You haven't seen my bed set. But then she did see my birth cert, so. No, yeah.
You do a good Scouse accent.
I do. I spend enough time there. She'll tell you.
Yeah.
Shout out to the boys. The Irish one, yeah, North. I like North. Laois is very distinctive. Niamh's from Laois. And it's fucking... Oh, Laois accent's hilarious. Because it's just pure, like... Niamh's brother was making this point to me at the weekend. He was like, where did Laois accent come out of? Because it's not like anywhere else. Carlo has a bit of it as well. But it's just miserable droll out, like...
Flat.
Yeah, it's just so flat, like... Ah,
it's
sad.
It's flat as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
Laois loud. Right.
All the L's. Except for Limerick.
All the five letter L's.
Yeah. Accents, yeah. I tell you another thing I was thinking about there the other day, because basically I saw a meme on Irish Simpsons fans today that was like
a great page,
yeah. I like the admins don't like me. I've been barred off that more times. But I've been barred off that more times. I once had a meme that had 560 likes in 16 minutes but didn't contain enough Simpsons for them. It was during the Finnish debacle, where the Finnish fella basically said Ireland and Britain were the same. And I put up, like, do you know the fella chasing his dog Fintan?
Yeah.
And I just had a Finland flag over the dog and an ISF flag over your man. And I just had, for fuck's sake, Fintan. It was
clever.
Glorious, like.
Too clever.
Too clever, but not enough since. I can see why they deleted it, but there's no need to bar me for 2 weeks and disable my commenting. But that aside, I saw a thing today and I was like... it was basically dissing Murphy's as a pint of stout. When you go to Cork and they serve you this shite or something along them lines. And what I got me thinking was, like, stout is a divisive thing. Guinness, Murphy's, or Beamish in Ireland are. Then, like, obviously we're lucky enough that we've had exposure to loads of really good craft stouts as well. But, like, brands and stuff, like, there are certain things where you'll only go for something brand or you notice the difference.
All right, go on.
So yeah. I'll come back to you with a few things.
Yeah.
The first one, which is the classic Irish one,
yeah,
that isn't alcohol involved, Tay, Barry's or Lions.
So
we're going to go over all ground. Barry's or Lions. I know Liam is Lions, yeah. And Geraldine is Barry's, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Owen grew up in a house that had Barry's and Lines.
No, so we actually didn't. We had Lines the whole way through my childhood. And then recently, Mam has like swiftly like turncoated.
Oh my God.
To Barry's. And Dad is still a loyal line head.
He's a loyalist.
He's a loyalist. I actually, it's one thing I don't mind that much.
You're not bothered.
I'm not actually that bothered, and it's also because of my fiance Kira, right? That like we like every night we go through either a peppermint, a rooibos, or a fucking like we'd have a chamomile tea before we go to bed. Like we're not tea purists, like you know.
Yeah.
Or maybe we're tea. Ultra purists, you know.
Or maybe you're like the Kama Sutra of tea drinkers.
Yeah, I think we are, yeah.
I respect that. I'm not too fussed either.
No.
Obviously, like, growing up in a house in Cork, it was Barry's true and true, but I love a Lions.
Okay.
So, like, I'll go for whatever's there.
Okay.
I'm the least fussy person when it comes to that. Like, you open Neil's parents' house, Teresa, God be good to her. Do like strong tea or weak tea every single week? And I'd be like, I'll drink whatever serves up to me. I'm not fussy.
Once it's strong or weak though, or do you mind? Do you know,
it doesn't matter.
I don't like a watery tea now. Like, you know, if they only dip the tea bag in.
Well, no, like, not that, like, but you know, like, weak tea, like, do you want the first pour, the last pour, the tea pot?
Yeah.
Cheers, give me whatever pour you have.
I know.
Do you know? No, you couldn't be drinking watery tea.
No, Jesus, no. Right, go on. What's their next category there?
Beans.
Oh,
Are you Heinz or Bachelors?
I think I'm Bachelors, yeah. I think Bachelor of Beans, yeah.
I don't know the difference.
I think
one is slightly sweeter and more sugary.
Yeah.
Possibly Heinz,
yeah.
Well, there's a touch of yank about that.
Yeah, I think Bachelor is a bit more...
Earthy,
tomatoey. It's kind of a...
Bit of dipped.
Bit of depth, less watery. Yeah.
I'll say Bachelors too, so...
Brand. Yeah, okay.
Ketchup.
Oh, so I grew up in a chef house, right? Well, I think I'm a Heinz man now.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I grew up in a chef house, and I'm a Heinz. Yeah, I'm a Heinz man now as well. But I don't know if we have Heinz because that's just what Niamh buys in the shop.
Cheaper,
possibly. We both grew up in posh houses and cheap cunts now.
Yeah, I don't know. I think like I thought I don't know. I think chef sauce is a bit more like tomato pasty. Do you know what I mean? Like it's a bit more gritty or something.
I'll be 100% honest with you. I don't use ketchup that much anymore.
Either way, yeah.
But what I have become a devil for is the halloumi fries in Aldi. But what I have is a chipotle, chef chipotle.
Oh, chef chipotle.
I think it's chef anyway. I've no, actually, to
this
honest with
podcast
you,
is sponsored by chef chipotle.
Chipotle. a few farts of that on the plate. Do you know the way it makes the fart noise when you do it?
Oh, yeah,
a few farts
yeah.
of that on the plate. Dip the old halloumi fries in it.
Right, that's good. Right.
You suggested mayo. I only know...
Hellman's has a taste of love. Food gets better when you put it all together with the world's best mayonnaise.
It's food loves Hellman's. Bring out the Hellman's and bring out the...
Yeah, sure, that's
so it's Hellman's, oh yeah.
It's all Hellman's. It's all we need,
We don't need to go any further than
even
that.
Even like, so I think that's like fucking entrenched in me from my mom. So mom, one of her key dishes, it's not a dish, but like one of her key sides is potato salad. She makes a mean...
You make a mean potato salad
mean
too.
Potato
Unless
salad.
It was your mom that made it that day.
No, I made it, but it was my mom's... Like mom was just basically like telling me exactly what to do. But she was just like, you can't be fucking messing around with the mayo in a potato salad. Like, you need to get that shit right. Like.
I'll tell you this much. My potato salad, which actually has some rave reviews as well, it's slightly different.
Yeah.
I don't use mayo. Salad cream.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
Salad cream in the potato. Spud salad, salad cream.
You're a disgrace to the podcast.
This has been the last ever episode of Smithcast. We're not breaking up. I'm handing me notice and work tomorrow as well. We can never see each other again. Yeah, I put salad cream in potato salad.
Alright. Right, okay, alright. Well, look, fair enough. Look,
everyone has a CrossFit.
Yeah. You have to be wrong sometimes. Well,
next time you're over to our house for dinner, I'll have to make a spare batch of potato salad just for you. Yeah. The last one I think might get a bit heated.
Yeah.
Might get a bit toasty. That was funny on two levels. Bread.
So we're talking the white pan.
I want to distinguish, right? We're talking supermarket bought white pan. Yeah. Because bread, Jesus Christ, you could do a podcast on bread alone. I tried to do one on sandwiches alone, I got ridiculed.
Actually, do you know who's out in, so I'm going to All Together Now Festival this weekend, right, in Waterford.
Yeah.
And do you know who's out there?
Pat the Baker.
No, Seagull Bakery.
Oh, fuck my eyeballs.
Delish, like. So
their sourdough is
fucking top of the range.
I'm actually salivating thinking about it.
But anyway, back to the shite.
So, I'll put it this with you, right? If you were to make Ireland's national dish, the tato sandwich.
Yeah.
What's your go-to bread? Because with a tato sandwich, you're not going brown bread, you're not going soda bread, you're not going sourdough, you're not going any of that bollocks.
No, you're going white.
You're going
white, plain, plain arse bread, like.
Yeah, but you're not going Wonder Bread either, though.
Oh, Jesus. Right.
Yeah. Imagine putting tatoes in between two sandwiches. Be disgraceful.
So I have two slices of white Brennan's bread.
You know, when I used to go to school, I'd be down there and I'd say, "What's today's bread, ma?" She'd say, "Brennan's bread. Today's bread today."
That's exactly why I'd be fucking shoving that packet of potato between.
I'll tell you now, right? We were a Brennan's bread household as well. But there was a dark horse in the tato sandwich game because the crust of Brennan's bread is a bit too soft.
Yeah, it is now, yeah.
Irish pride has a fine, durable crust on it.
Irish pride was made by the Protestants.
Here, listen, so is Guinness.
I also made that up.
You were trying to fucking...
Hey, I'm trying to rattle you.
If they were made by the Protestants, hold on a second. I'm not sectarian like that. Old Form was a prod.
Yeah.
Napertani was a prod. Like Blind Boy named one of his cats Napertani.
Yeah, but so was Tony Pride.
That's a lie. Did you don't want anything to do with Pride? Good God. We're going to get sued.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, moving on from that. Speaking of brands and shite. And
speaking of pride.
Speaking of shite. Maybe pride. Maybe people are proud of their stuff. Do you know that TV?
Hold on, one second.
1916 on the clock there, yeah. Not on the clock, but on the timer on the podcast recording the voice. Gavora the Earl of Galeo.
Ayeshke Gwilshiv.
Good job. Basically, a TV show my old lad loves is How It's Made. Right? Yeah. Now, they do How It's Made on like shit like Roller Coasters and Concord and Elastic Bands and shit. I don't know, something stupid anyway. What item of history would you love to know how it's made?
Right, so item in history. So when you said this to me, right, I was actually just thinking of things that you just don't see that commonly now, right?
Yeah.
That are like in fucking antique rooms or whatever. Right?
Rudy Kyrie's just one of them.
So what I'm always fascinated with is like fucking clockworks, right? So like grandfather clocks, because you have that like beautiful like wooden
artistry.
You have like the pendulum coming down, you have, and then you have like the gears of a clock. I'm always like fascinated by like gears of a clock. So I would love to see like that being made, like just from like start to finish. Because I think as well with like a lot of like that How It's Made show, right? Like it was, it's class because it's like, say like a Bic pen or something like that, right? But like it's like the amazing thing about it is that it's mass produced, and that like you get
the efficiency
see
of it,
the efficiency, and you get to see it move from like, you know, the simplest point where you're making like the tip of the pen down to like the bit where like that's shoved into a plastic, you know, holder.
How do
you
get the
you know,
ink and
then,
stuff like
that? And then the ink is put in.
How do they do like the reverse capillary and stuff like that?
Well, like there's no person actually like touching that pen the whole way through. Whereas like I think it's like grandfather clock or something, you know, it's like they're not mass producing them, like, you know, it's,
no, they're handcrafted.
So like I think, and like actually, so we're in, obviously we're in Waterford here at the moment, and Waterford Crystals is like the, was the big industry in Waterford. Like it was like massive, like half the town was employed in Waterford Crystals at one stage. There was like an old story that was kind of going around at one stage where the government asked Waterford Crystals for a loan at one stage to like clear its debts for like a small bit. That's how it's successful the business was at one stage during like the 70s. But the factory tour out in Waterford Crystal when it was like out, when it was out on the Cork Road, was amazing. And it was like all those items were like handcrafted, hand blown by like people, like, you know, like the glass was hand blown, and like that used just absolutely amazing. And that would be a fucking amazing How It's Made. Like,
I tell you how this came into my head as to talk about it on the podcast was, I was in the grand uncle's house last week, and like, you know what I love about going into the older generation's house where they don't have a skybox or an airbox or whatever, they literally have RT1, RT2, 3, whatever
Virgin
it's called
Media.
Now, Virgin Media 3 or whatever the fuck, and TG Carter, right? They have 4 channels. One of them through the medium of Irish, and 3 of them just showing shite, right? But one of the like nationwide or one of these shows basically had up that Jemison Distilleries, Irish Distilleries, Jemison in Middleton, had hired the first cooper that they've hired for, I don't know, is it 50 years or something like that? And he turns out to be the son of a woman, Sharon O'Neill, that I know in Cork. And I was like, fuck, like, do you know, even like the song The Town I Love So Well, by trade I was a cooper, lost out to redundancy. And then like basically they're saying, like, my trade was lost to progress, my town's a memory. So it's like, you know, Dublin going into the city and all these like trades, like being a cooper, which basically you make a barrel, was gone. I was just like fascinated. So then it showed how a barrel is made, and I was like, fuck me, like, I never realised so much went into making a barrel. So I thought that was fascinating. That was a really good one. What would I love to see made? I think back, like, how the fuck were castles made back in the day? Do you know what I mean? From a historical point of view, I'd love to see like how was a castle made. How was Blarney Castle built?
Even like, say, like nowadays with like any building, right? You have like architects and you have like plans and whatever. Like boys are just laying down stone. Then, you know what I mean? Like
then boys didn't have cranes.
Yeah, there's no, but like, you know, but even like, say, before the cranes or whatever were put down, like, you know what? Like, what's your plan? Like, you're not, like, you know, just like at, like. See, like,
I'm sure if Finn was here, he'd say the plan was to build a fort, whatever the human cost, like, life wasn't,
I know,
as valuable,
but like,
anyway.
But even like, say, like the drawings or whatever, like, you know, as in, it's not to the same, like, I don't know, degree of.
They're going by feel.
Yeah, they're going by feel, like, yeah. Mm. And, like, I think that's absolutely incredible.
Think of,
like,
when was Reginald's Tower in Waterford there built?
Yeah, I don't know.
14th century, 13th century.
13th century, I'd say, yeah.
Yeah. Sure, still standing, like.
Yeah.
Grand. Yeah, castles for me.
Yeah, that's pretty, yeah.
Anything like futuristic, you'd love to know how it's made.
I don't know.
I'll tell you, just get the mind going.
Yeah.
I'd love to see how they make satellites that stay up in space, like.
Yeah.
That fascinates me, like.
Yeah.
But the other thing as well I'd love to see how they make is like the carbon fibre wings on Formula One cars and stuff, like.
Yeah, I think those would be, because it's, you know,
how do they aerodynamically test them and shit like that, you know?
But see that, like, I think, like, how it's made in terms of, like, those older things, like, say, a barrel or whatever, right? That, like, it was just like, oh, you know, like, say, any barrel will hold water, any fucking, any style of barrel will hold water, whatever, properly, right? But, like, say, those aerodynamic wings, like, as you said there, it's the testing of them, the design influence, it's like, you know, and it's even like the design, the computer generated models that they do beforehand. Yeah,
at the 3D printing and stuff.
Yeah.
But also then, like, and the aerodynamic testing in chambers and stuff.
Yeah.
What I think is fascinating is how they design them with the capacity to modify adjustments to alternate downforce and stuff like that by just like a few twists of a spanner, like.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely blows my mind.
Yeah.
I'd
like, I suppose for like how it's made, I'd like to go outside of kind of like the physical realm of things and go into, like, do you know, like the augmented reality things where like say now, like with Snapchat or whatever, they can, you know, they have a program whereby, like, you can, like, take a photo of take a video of a table and have, like, a dancing tree or something, like, just dancing around the table.
How is,
like,
that tree made?
How is that tree made? Or, like, how have they related that computer-generated image onto a physical...
But isn't an awful lot of it of... do you know when you go to sign into something and it's the
Capture,
and they're like, take all the boxes that have tables.
Yeah.
So then, millions of people do that for a year. Then the computers can recognize what a table is.
Well, like, they're like we're still doing that now, and like what's going to come out of that is going to be absolutely amazing. Like, so at the moment we're like, oh, you know, identify which of these images have a streetlight in them or have a crosswalk or whatever. And that's all feeding into driverless cars.
Yeah.
Where, like, they'll come out and they'll be like...
Or virtual reality.
Yeah.
Or, like, say, like, the amount of effort that goes into training a guide dog.
Yeah.
Are they going to have virtual reality...
Guide dogs. Maybe.
Or are the guide dogs going to be playing virtual reality games in their training? That'd be cool.
Maybe.
That'd be very cool.
I'll tell you, I was doing a course there a while ago, and we had access to the Microsoft HoloLens, which is an augmented reality headset. So the difference between virtual reality and augmented reality is, virtual reality is where you put on a headset and your vision is blocked and you're viewing a screen on the headset, and that projects an image and, you know, you're in a different world. Whereas augmented reality is that you see the real world, but that an image is projected on your real world. So say we're in a pub here, and then, as I said, like, a tree can, you know, come up on the table.
A point is projected into your hand.
Exactly, right? So I was using the Microsoft HoloLens, and one of the things they're using was this AR anatomy, I think it's called, app, right, for the HoloLens. So I put on the HoloLens, and I, like, stood in the middle of a room, and, like, this voice came in my ear, and it was just like, you know, please look at a point on the floor and then click your finger in the air. So, like, literally, I just put my finger in the air and just, like, pointed downwards as if I was clicking. So, like, put my vision on one bit on the floor, and like kind of like a cursor kind of came on the floor where I was looking, and I clicked. Next minute, like, this skeleton came off out of the ground and like was like standing on the floor.
And you
there.
Shat yourself.
I shat myself. But after I cleaned myself up, I like was able to walk around the skeleton, and like, so the skeleton's there, and we were able to like say, like, point at a bone on the body, and then like when you pointed or like touched the bone, like this label came off, and it's just like scapula.
Nick Riviera came off like the well, scapula. Like, can Nick do the
popular?
Oh, lads, this has been brilliant. Really yeah. Enjoyed the evening in Welch's here tonight. You know the score, lads. This podcast is supported by you, the listener.
Yeah.
No, we, in fairness, we've got some patrons and Patreon. I mean, to rob a blind boy isn't... If you met us in real life, would you like to buy us a cup of coffee or a price of a pint?
Mainly a pint, like.
Mainly a pint, yeah. You can do that on www.patreon.com/snowcast. You can buy us the price of a cup of coffee or the price of a pint every month. And we've got tiers there, the whole lot. Go and have a look. If it's for you, great. If not, the podcast will say being free. Thanks a million for listening in the first place. If you know someone who loves a pint, loves pub chat, and loves podcasts, direct them our way. If they don't like podcasts, get them involved. Follow us Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And I just want to say thanks so much, because since I've said, like, please start fucking, like, commenting on our shit and sharing our shit and interacting with us online, you've been brilliant. We've had loads of people tweeting us, getting back to us, all that kind of stuff. We absolutely love it. It makes our day. You've no idea, like, the buzz we get when someone interacts with Snowcast on social media. Keep listening to podcasts, keep liking, keep sharing the usual stuff. Listen, lads, we're going to have an old settler pint before we go home, and we're going to have a bit of real life chat that is going to be the exact same as what we've just been talking. And thanks to Jacob Welch for holding us. Thanks to you for listening to us, Argus. I suppose, as we spoke about the Irish language, we're going to sign off. Oscar Owen, Roman Griff, Dave Galeer, Aish Declation, Tino Cast, Mila Baker Steve,
Aish Declation, the Sword to Brack,
Shimar Derfa, August Mar Dirt, Dodd Orm, a WhatsApp, or in the Choctana, Aish Lefung, the Hound, August Four, Tolly to Brock, Monsa to Enough, the Lord, Secunda, the Galliba, Roman Griff, the Galeer. And if any of you have any spare All Ireland tickets, send them away. Slong Fall, August Launch of Dave, Clunk of the Glasses.
Clunk.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.